my computer wants us. Yeah, I just need to think. Okay. I'm right or wrong.
So it's my pleasure to introduce our next speaker, Garnet Hertz. Garnet is here at the University of California at Irvine as a Fulbright scholar and also currently a graduate student in the ACE program. So he's one of our very own. And I think it's fair to say Garnet has used robotics in his own work. He has used animals, living and dead, in the past. And more recently, he has really become interested in the intersection between animals and machines. And I understand that's what he will be talking to us today about, the way he approached those topics within his own research, but also about the ways it has been precedented by military research. Yeah, he's a Fulbright scholar from Canada, I should say, visiting us. And Garnet's work has most recently been shown at SIGGRAPH here in LA last year. So we're going to see that project. But he's also currently organizing, I would say, a robot initiative lecture series in the California area called DogBot. So if you're in the area and you want to see more work of that kind, fellows, interested associates, I welcome to join you. I came to one of those and it was a very inspiring event in the area. So please help me. I think, welcome, Garnet Hertz.
Thanks. And I guess the normal thank yous are in order. You know, it's really nice to present my goofy stuff here, so hope you enjoy it. As Beatrice had mentioned, I came into this topic in a roundabout way. I came into the concept and field of biorobotics, and in particular military technologies within biorobotics, from the context of building my own robot. This is a prototype of the system I'm working on right now. The system essentially is a mobile robot, but instead of a computer at its core processing unit, it has actually a living cockroach. And so the cockroach sits on the center of this ping pong ball, which is attached to a mouse, or like a trackball. And it scurries around, and so the embodied movement of this insect actually controls the physical machine. So as I was developing this, I wasn't looking anything into military technology. I've called this control and communication in the animal and the machine, which is also the title of my thesis. Sort of, you know, I'm glad that you're laughing. Part of this for me was to unabstract the biological inspiration of technology that, you know, is quite prevalent in artificial life, biomorphic computing, neural networks, computer viruses, subsumption architectures, artificial intelligence, biorobotics. Even Chris here, standing at the back, has a robotic controller board called the Cockroach. So, you know, it's really a predominant thing, or at least I saw it as a predominant thing. And for me, I really wanted to just look at the cockroach versus the computer, where instead of maybe looking at intelligence as something like Deep Blue winning a chess game, maybe intelligence could be looked at in a more embodied, tactile sense. In other words, if you put Deep Blue on one side of a 405 and told it to walk across the 405 without getting hit, it might have a hard time. It might get destroyed, you know, 100 times out of 100. So this was part of exploring that. Now, I started looking into similar work related to this. And in particular, looking at cockroaches in robotics. And the surprising thing is that out of the 15 research projects that I found, 14 of them have been funded by DARPA. Now, does anybody know what, I'm guessing that some people might know what DARPA is here? DARPA? Okay, good. Never know. Yeah. Who can say? So I started looking into some of these projects, and I found work with controlling, there was a DARPA initiative called Controlled Biological Systems. My work directly, I knew of this work before. This is a system to remote control the bodily movements of a cockroach through electrical stimulation in their antenna. This work has also been developed in New York with rats and making them remote controllable and wearing video cameras and so forth, funded by DARPA. This is just some of the work in remote controlling these robots. Also, so you have actual cockroaches being funded by DARPA. As well, you have bio-inspired machines primarily used in locomotion studies, and especially covering really rough terrain that are funded by DARPA as well. Lastly, and this is what sort of threw me off when looking at this stuff, you have abstractions of like cockroach neurons and neurology and networks used to like navigate missiles and stuff. So I started looking at this and it's like, you know, what's going on here? Is it just that the American scientific community is heavily funded by DARPA in general, especially robotics, which I think is probably a good point. So I started looking at maybe what could be some of the reasons that I, from my biased point of view, coming from cockroaches and robots, see that there's a lot of work in this area. So, first of all, one thing that I've been thinking about is technological development being haunted by the spirits of animals. And I think this is something that is outside of the range of military technology. But the animal machine really correlate to each other generally, apart from military technology. So what I mean by that is technology within culture is filled with the spirit of animals. Things like the automobile is maybe reminiscent of the horse, or even the term horsepower. Automobile dashboards, for example. You could even think of cinema with Muybridge and Animals in Motion and so forth. And Akira has actually talks about this in Electric Animal and brings forward several examples of interesting ways in which artifacts of animals are naturally in a lot of technology that we have around us. As well, I mean, the war is obviously a dangerous place. And as we can, you know, as maybe you can think back to the history of early space flight and so forth with sending animals into space and so forth, war is really a similar terrain. So the animal machine, I think, emerges out of this physical danger, you know, similar to lab testing and so forth. So, and there's some very obvious examples of this, some of which have some sadistic humor to them. This is Soviet dogs that were trained to have explosives on their backs, and they were trained to look for food underneath German tanks or tank prototypes, and so these dogs would essentially be starved and led out onto the battlefield, running toward the German tanks, going underneath them and triggering a trigger on their back and exploding. And this came to be really feared by German military. And this was actually a very serious initiative within the Soviet military, and that's the general of the dog army right there. You have other examples that really bring forward the idea of physical danger. This is a project called Project X-Ray, developed by the American military. And this contraption was actually filled with living bats, and it was dropped. This is an artist representation of the bomb. The bomb wasn't actually a box, but these bats each had little backpacks of fire-starting material on them. And they would go, the idea was that they were going to drop them on Japan, have them go into residences and buildings, go up into the rafters and camp out there until their things were detonated, and they would burn the entire city down. This whole project was scrapped because of a lot of problems they had with these bats getting loose and burning down American military bases and so forth. And the whole project was scrapped as a result of Hiroshima and so forth. It wasn't nearly as effective as that. As well, physical danger comes up in this this graphic that's too goofy to even, I could have made something worse than this, but this is the U.S. Navy Marine Mammal Program. And this program has always denied the use of animals to deliver explosive payloads. The work is primarily marketed as retrieving warheads that haven't gone off and so forth. So you can see the breadth of work that's been done here with animals, and it's really extensive. If you start especially looking at the numbers of animals and the amount of money that goes into it, it's actually quite surprising. So this is a typical application that they have, is dolphins going and picking up these warheads. This is an animal that went AWOL on the Navy, and there was a big PETA really got upset, and there was a big scandal with this particular dolphin. Okay. Thirdly, embodied complex environments. Oh, sorry. I wanted to mention the idea of language in the context of death. I mean, it may be quite clear, you know, why are animals used and why are they used instead of people. It's interesting to just note that traditionally, if you look at the theory of how this sort of came to be, animals are typically viewed as lacking language. You know, from Aristotle to Lacan, you know, including Descartes, Kant, Heidegger, Levinas, and so forth. It's a pretty predominant thing, and it's really related also to the idea of animals not having spirits. I won't go into that, though. Embodied complex environment. Humans and machines, within the context of locomotion, and especially within the theme of war, locomotion is really an important thing. in terms of crossing and entering territories and going places. And as animals have been replaced by machines, locomotion has gained a lot of things, you know, speed and power, but it also has overlooked some things like agility over rough terrain. So beyond the wheel and beyond the tank, this is where, really, I saw where cockroaches and insects and different systems are really admired in terms of their locomotive abilities, and of course this has been appropriated and used by the military. Lastly, it's tough not to look at a lot of this research and not see that, and to clearly see that a whole pile of it really never ends up in the battlefield. And of course, this may not be a big revelation for everyone, but the cyborg soldier, animal-machine hybrids, they give really good press. And I'm sort of starting to discover this with my project too. You know, it looks good on the cover of Wired. It's very photogenic, and so the image of these systems, where the image is really as important, or I would argue more important than the function, they present a visible threat. They also present technological superiority and so forth. I think even some of the systems can really be seen also as recruitment tools and so forth. And so I see this as having, you know, really good marketing value. I've sort of thought of this of DARPA as being an ad agency of sorts. And a lot of robotics researchers working as a creative design team for the campaign. And if you look at the press that some of these projects get, this is from a Berkeley exoskeleton project. It's a human-based exoskeleton that fits around the lower extremities of a soldier. The press that's generated off of a project like this is really incredible. Like you couldn't pay to buy that advertising space without, you know, a whole big whack of cash. So for me, from researching cockroaches and robots, I wound up, you know, looking down the face of DARPA, and I'm still not certain, and I'd like to sort of raise questions and have some feedback on this. I'm not sure if this is just looking at a general trend of military-based funding within the institution and within the academy. My thought is that it was actually something considerably more than this, although that's definitely a big part of it. Where the technology is haunted by the spirit of animals, physical danger of death of the battlefield, complex embodied environments that animals are experts at by default and have a hard time not being inspirational, and also marketing toward the future of warfare. And so I'm interested in your thoughts. That's it for my presentation. And that's it. So.
Cockroach is the prosthesis of because ease of the circuitry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, let me sort of a set of questions I'd like to address. Let me just sort of put it to you in a relatively sort of open form. What do you see in terms of the work that you've done? Is there something that remains about, let's say, the specificity of the flesh as something out of which and with which design and design engineering might work? Right? The examples that you've sort of shown of the soldier and the horse, or this and that, are also other sorts of fleshly prostheses of different sorts of from the specificity of the human form, specificity of the animal form, and so forth. You're obviously working with sort of ways in which those specificities are becoming complicated and where they overlap in quest. Right? I'm thinking of Agamben's work on the differentiations of the sort of historical differentiations of human bodies and animal bodies, mm-hmm. and the ways in which those have been sort of the rhetorics of those sort of ways. But again, the question that he has to do to specify as you see it, regardless of DARPA, regardless of the military, even per se, the specificity of flesh, of something out of which to be designed, to be sort of enabled with these new forms of performative capability. What is sort of the framework by which you see your own life as sort of guiding things?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously biased toward the biological and the mechanical. I'm quite skeptical of artificial life, artificial intelligence, and I think that the concept of trying to manufacture intelligence or life apart from biological substrate is failed fundamentally. And so, with that in mind, the work that I'm doing just tries to sort of wheedle away at some of those issues and trying to literally bring sort of an anachronistic kind of things back into this technology to kind of propose that this, in my case, this creature that's evolved over billions of years, that's all going to survive us when we're all, after World War III. I think it's naive for humans to sort of think that they've outsmarted they're smarter than a lot of very simple biological systems. So I'm not quite sure if I'm addressing your question specifically.
It's an answer that requires that you're sort of looking at the flesh as a sort of condensation of fundamental intelligence.
Process.
Yeah,
actually, it's a little bit hard to hear.
Oh no, I was just saying. Perhaps the answer, as I understand it, is that you're looking at the cockroach essentially, as a sort of condensation of kind of cognitive intelligence.
Well, and also that
as opposed to the sort of affordances of the flesh as a mechanical system.
Well, and that maybe the flesh has more to do with. I mean, I wouldn't quite go far to say. In terms of cognition, but maybe embodiment is actually really important thing, and maybe we're not going to have our brains uploaded into cyberspace, and maybe a number of these things are interesting, but when I look at that, it's much more. I see much more within the narrative of the mind-body dualism and sort of your mind going to heaven and your body being buried and that whole thing.
I really enjoyed the sort of presentation of the cockroach for this wonderful. I just wanted to make a comment and then throw in yet another element to ask people to respond to. The comment is the box of bats was fantastic. I think it opens up a sort of history of biowarfare that's mediated by animals as weapons, which is interesting. The thing I wanted to throw in is you mentioned sort of thinking about animals and in sort of history of philosophy, and I was reminded of a comment that Marx makes either in Capital or in Teresa about comparing an ant to an engineer. And what's the difference? Well, they both build structures, but the engineer has the capacity to conceptualize beforehand and then to carry out the plan. And what's interesting about his comment is that Marx doesn't mention that ants are group animals, that they perform that way for some group animals. And I don't want to dip into Ayo's presentation too much, but I was wondering if you could think about sort of the labor of packs in a way, because cockroaches, rats, I mean, we're all talking about sort of pack animals that perform specific kinds of labor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, that would be a very interesting thing to look into because, I mean, at least from my exposure to just, I don't want to say philosophy in general, but a lot of it is quite sort of individually oriented. You know, it has to do with one person, typically, and you know, another. So, yeah, the idea of a pack is something that sort of, I mean, it's obviously coming more predominant in computer science and all of these other fields that are looking at more distributed kind of systems.
It's a somewhat stupid question. My cockroaches, I mean, the history of animals and warfare is actually always linked to a specific, as you said, a specific behavior, and the example that you gave with the dog, the Russian kennel, was that dogs have a specific pattern of behavior that makes them look for food, and they can be trained or how do you say that? In a certain way. Now with roaches, is it an animal that you use because not only they are available in every household, but also because they have no behavior? They don't learn, or do they learn, or what is it that makes a cockroach interesting?
I originally started working with cockroaches a number of years ago, sort of as a joke on thinking about post-humanism, whereas the cockroach after World War III could be a post-human. In terms of using the cockroach specifically, there is a history of, within mobile robotics, looking at cockroaches as an inspiration to designing architectures of control within a robot. And so it's a little bit more loaded using a cockroach, I think, within the context of a mobile robot. In terms of whether it learns or not, I mean, they don't have a brain. I've had some cockroaches that seem to adapt into the system, that become immersed in the environment, because I also have feedback to the insect as well, which I didn't really go into. I've seen some that totally object and that don't pay any attention to the system that they're in. It's the interesting thing about seeing this thing move around is that you immediately project yourself into the brain of this insect, and it's actually quite difficult to know what's going on. I just use them because there's also functional issues, like I don't have to go through animal research boards if I'm using insects, and I've written and presented on that as well. Artists using animals, they're cheap. They eat garbage. They, you know, Carl's Jr. or whatever you want to feed them, and they're easy to work with. So it's just a basic unit of life.
I don't know the numbers now because I'm let's just start there. So I think your point that animals have gloriously failed to be instrumentalized by the military and yet continue to be kind of continue to be involved and subsumed is actually a really interesting point. But isn't it to do with the idea of a radically different notion of control? Once you're actually engaging animals, there is an interrelationship that's not a command control. The
biological and psychological conditioning of the sort of we heard about in previous presentations, that in fact they are less complicit. And so as a kind of icon for the new orders of complex adaptive systems, here we have these unit of analysis, this unit of life, or in each case that we have complex adaptive systems that refuse to become the foot soldiers and so refuse to take a part that Black Americans or various other subhuman classes have taken. And so they're so are they this essential point of resistance?
That's an excellent question. I mean, animals are admired and loved as long as they're, rugged, instinctive. But when they start to think, and when it starts to subsume the control, and when it starts to be random, and these bats flying in and burning up these things, then, it's obviously a problem. I really don't know what the correlation is exactly. I'm still sort of working on that, so.
There's this thing that's happening in your work you're referring to when you wrote this, you built these cockroach-like insect robots in the 90s, at which point a lot of people involved in robotics start studying animal behavior, build ideas about how animals work, and Eugene's comment about ants being social animals, E.O. Wilson, the supreme herbologist of all time, had these kind of notions of them as being social animals, and being a British scholar, he modeled them kind of on a monarchic system. So there's this kind of infinite regression happening between scientists studying animals, trying to model animals, studying animals, using these two things as kind of group systems, circular group systems, to try to define and describe the other. And you're adding one more layer. Is there anything you're trying to do specifically with your work in doing this, this extra loop? Or you mentioned Robin Brooks and Cleveland with this assumption architecture, which you believe modeled brains of simple animals.
Yeah, I mean, initially when I had started out, I wanted to make this robot work better than, the cockroach work better than a PIC chip, for example, or like a microprocessor. Initially that was my goal, to get this thing avoiding obstacles, and it has sometimes done that, but then it will just stop and not do anything, and will go off on its own, and just, it has its own free will, sort of. In terms of Rodney Brooks and so forth, I mean, I think, I would hope that if he would see it, he would at least get a good laugh out of it, maybe. I mean, it's more than that. I mean, with the work, though, I have shown it to biomedical engineering and robotics, mechanical and aerospace people here. They're interested in terms of the mental models, and if you can remap mental models of an insect, and if it, how malleable the neural models are and so forth. Like, there are actual functional things that you can use it for, but I haven't really explored that in depth.
So, Donald, I sort of go a little further with some of the panelists raising about this kind of, as we've discussed before, this two classes of applications of cockroaches and robotics. One of which are exploiting the quasi-computational power of the cockroach and applying it to a mechanical system of mobility, and the other, vice versa, utilizing the mobility of the cockroach to build some sort of simple computational system around it. What's interesting to me about that is that that dualism perfectly restates that Cartesianism, which is at the core of all technological development. So it's the cockroach's brain and the machine's body, or the machine's brain and the cockroach's body, and that's actually quite laughable, really. So kind of where one goes with that, and you're talking about questions of mobility and mechanics, one has to observe that the engineered planar surface and the wheel are part of the same technological complex, and one cannot exist or survive without the other. And so it's interesting also to observe that the vast majority of robotic devices which have been developed on linoleum floors.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kind of rotational, 19th century rotational technology is perfectly applicable to engineered architectural environments and to road surfaces. And as soon as you get off-road, you know, you have to start looking at systems which evolve to deal with pre-engineered environments.
Well, I'm not the best one to speak to this, but I'll give it a kick anyways. The only work that I've really seen that references that is out of Japan, and in specific, just concepts of machines being much more spirited than it would be in North America. To be frank, it's something that I haven't really, like, the idea of the machine having a spirit, I'm not quite sure where to begin with that. And in terms of the dolphin going AWOL, I mean, they had spent, you know, $50 million training this dolphin with all these implants and so forth. And it was supposed to obey commands, and it had a camera mounted on it, and it just swam away, as dolphins will do, despite all the funding and so forth. And so and it was a good case, you know, that PETA had in terms of using this dolphin, you know. Maybe the dolphin really doesn't want to be there, you know. Maybe the dolphin never signed up an enlistment form to go into the military.
Is it in Canada?
I can't say. I had nothing to do with it.
But it's just